Welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with my good buddy, Jason McClellan.
Hello, Alejandro.
Hello.
Hello. La, la, la.
I love the la, la, la. So, how you doing? We just got back from Vegas. Have you recovered?
I have recovered, yeah. It was a great trip. We had a lot of fun. Good to be back, but it was a lot of fun being back at the National Atomic Test Museum.
Yeah, we've talked about the museum before because they've had some cool talks, and it's always an excuse to go out there to go to Vegas and see some good buddies. But this time they had Jason Moreen and I speaking, and it was pretty cool.
Yeah, I think people liked it. I liked it. We had fun.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. So thanks to the museum, and we're back and intact. Well, mostly, openmind.tv is not totally intact. Well, the website was down for the weekend, as you probably noticed, but it is back up. We were moving offices. Not everything is back up. We're having to kind of do things a little different for the radio show. It's going to get up a little late, and we probably won't be able to post any stories till hopefully tomorrow, but we should be back to 100% really soon here, and now we have some new fancy offices.
Yeah, fancy offices. Be much fancier when our email, phone, and computer is working properly.
Yeah, that will be good. So our guest today, our guest is Aaron Sagers, really cool guy. He was on the Travel Channel show Paranormal Paparazzi. He runs a site, Paranormal Pop Culture, and he is a writer and kind of geek culture pundit for CNN, for MTV, and lots of other, Huffington Post, and lots of other sites. So he's writing stuff all the time. So he tracks the paranormal, but also, you know, sci-fi and tech and other things that are considered geek. So we're going to talk to him about that, and it ought to be a lot of fun. He's a really cool guy. We met him and got to spend time with him in Roswell, Jason and I, last summer, and we just really hit it off. He's a good friend of Lee Spiegel's. He actually lives in New York. We got to go see him when we were out in New York. So he's a really neat guy, and he's speaking at the UFO Congress, so you'll be able to see him there. So really excited about that, and it's going to be a great talk really soon here. But before we talk to Aaron, of course, we always talk about the UFO news of the week. We didn't have a whole lot of news last week because the website was down here for our move. But we do have a few stories, and there were some good ones. So, Jason, what is your story of the week?
Well, Alejandro, I'm going to cheat and mention a couple of things. I touched on these briefly at our talk in Las Vegas at the National Atomic Testing Museum, but there was some big-time news last week in the field of astrobiology and the search for life. First of all, scientists determined that space dust contains water. So that has people excited, suggesting that water is indeed widespread through the universe. And when looking for life as we know it, typically where there's water, there's a good chance there's life. So that's very exciting to scientists. And then the dwarf planet Ceres, right here in our own solar system, this is a dwarf planet that resides in the asteroid belt. Scientists determined that it is spewing, it's erupting water. These geysers, plumes of water, are erupting into space. So there's good signs, there's tons of water there. And in fact, they think there's more fresh water on Ceres than on the entire planet Earth. So lots of water there, exciting developments right in our solar system. So Alejandro, I'm very confident that science is going to announce the discovery, the official discovery of extraterrestrial life very, very soon.
Yeah, it's super exciting. All of this water all over the place, including in space. Water is supposed to be the key to life. And I just, my imagination was just going wild as you were talking. And I was thinking of what if there is like a big water bubble floating around in space somewhere, and there are creatures swimming inside of this thing.
And one day there's going to be this enormous space storm, and it's going to start raining all these aliens down on top of us.
Ooh, cool.
Yeah,
I didn't even think of
that.
Sweet. That's going to be fun. Hopefully these things aren't too big and scary, though, like Godzilla or something.
There are probably some of those floating around. Maybe they're microscopic Godzillas.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I'd love to have a little pet Godzilla.
That'd be cool.
You could put in a cage and...
It thinks it's tough, but it's just this tiny bug.
Put little Lego cities in there and it can go and destroy them.
Yes.
That'd be a lot of fun. So we'll see. The future is anything could happen.
Yeah, and you know, this is all good signs for intelligent extraterrestrial life too. I'm sure that's out there, and we're going to discover that very soon too. And there are a lot of missions underway, and I've actually got an article in the next issue of Open Minds magazine that will talk all about that and the best places for that possibility in our solar system.
Yeah. I mean, I said this before, but your talk was really good where you talked about astrobiology and these things at the museum. And when you put it together, you know, it's just really exciting, especially to consider that most of these projects or that you've talked about and the discoveries that have been made have been so recent that, you know, a few years ago, you know, we didn't have much of an idea what might be out there. But there's so much more evidence of water and the possibilities and the likelihood of life out there.
You're right.
It's amazing.
What makes it so much more exciting is that thinking back, I mean, you and I follow this stuff all the time, but when you actually sit down and realize that most of these developments are fairly recent developments. The first exoplanet was only discovered in 1992, not that long ago. And most of these confirmed planets we have now are the result of Kepler, and Kepler was just launched in 2009.
Right.
This is stuff that's just happened. We found all these planets. We're learning so much more about life as we know it, where life can exist in the universe. So very exciting developments happening all the time at a rapid rate right now. So I'm super excited about that. But again, there's more about that in the magazine. But Alejandro, what is your story?
My story is this triangular object on the moon that's been getting some news, and it's kind of a weird thing. And usually, you know, when people say, oh, they post these pictures of weird stuff on the moon or Mars, it looks like rocks to me, or it looks like pixelation, doesn't look like anything too exciting. I can never make anything out. But just recently, this guy on YouTube, Wow for Real, posted a YouTube video where he went on Google Maps Moon, because there's Google Moon where you, just like Google Go Maps, you could go look at the moon, and these are pictures from JPL and NASA. And he found this triangular-looking object, and there are these like little lights or little dots that are in a V formation, and it's very, very strange. And, you know, Huffington Post got this website expert who said he thinks it's just pixelization and stuff, but I don't know. It looks, you know, of course we look at pictures all the time, and I've seen a lot of pixelization, but I haven't seen anything like this. I guess the one thing that stands out for me, sure, triangular square objects that could be pixels, but are all these little dots that are in a perfect V and perfectly spaced. That's kind of weird. It's weird.
It is weird. You're right. We see a lot of this, a lot of weird stuff in pictures, pixelations, anomalies. This one is different. I think most likely that's what it is, but it does look weird. And I wasn't on the moon, and I don't have access to the moon, so I don't know. But it is one of the more strange ones that we've seen. I agree, and yeah. I'm perplexed by it.
Yeah, you can go to our story and see the coordinates there, and I have a picture that I took. But all I did is I downloaded Google Maps. I went to the moon section, and I went to the coordinates, and I found the object myself. And sure enough, it looked just like in the YouTube video. You can then kind of go around and look at it in different angles. So I definitely encourage people to go check out the Google Earth thing and check it out for yourself and see what you think. And, you know, maybe we'll get some more explanation soon or some other pictures of this area to kind of figure things out. But really weird.
Really weird indeed.
really weird. It's going to be a weird news soon, too. I guess Lee Spiegel's writing about it. So he's a weird guy, and he's got weird news. And
very
so
weird.
We'll see if he discovers anything else.
I hope he does. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So there's our news. Thanks for joining me, Jason.
Always my pleasure.
But now let us listen to Aaron Sagers.
I am very happy and excited. Usually I'm either happy or excited. I'm happy and excited for this one. And this is Aaron Sagers, who is a journalist, a TV personality, and an entertainment pundit. And I don't use that term enough, a pundit. I like that one. It's a lot of fun. And on the paranormal, on sci-fi, let's see, you did the Travel Channel show, Paranormal Paparazzi. You're blogging for Huffington Post. Why don't you tell us some more about actually what you do, because you're all over the place.
Well, first off, thanks so much for having me on. I know we've been trying to set up this interview for a while, and I've been had a nutty travel schedule. So thanks for having me on. I'm excited. What am I up to? That's a question I often have to ask. Basically, I've been a journalist for more than 10 years now, and most of that time has been spent as an entertainment journalist. I have done some hard news. I've done some travel journalism. I've, you know, covered a lot of ground, but primarily an entertainment journalist. And, you know, really, for me, I grew up a geek involved in a lot of, like, nerdy endeavors, like comic mm-hmm. books, role-playing games, and of course, a lot of sci-fi movies and fantasy movies and horror movies. And, you know, it was a dream come true when I was able to make a living writing about movies and TV and stuff. And yet, you know, I was always kind of working for someone else. So in 2009, while remaining an entertainment journalist for, you know, major media companies, I launched my own website called ParanormalPopCulture.com, where I could really focus on the entertainment genre of the paranormal and supernatural, and that was really sort of a catalyst for me in another direction, where I suddenly started getting booked to be speakers at events and go on TV and talk about this stuff and host you know, Comic Cons and things like that. And so now I am, you know, still a writer and a journalist, but I'm also sort of a professional nerd, I guess, at cons and a pundit. So yeah, I don't know. That's sort of in a nutshell, like who I am and what I'm up to.
Mm-hmm. A big nutshell that is not necessarily a completely hard nutshell, kind of out there and all over, which is cool. I mean, you get a kind of delve into everything that's related to all of that, which is kind of everything there is out there.
Yeah, and, you know, what's cool is, you know, obviously I do have a great love for, you know, UFO stories and encounters and along with all the other things I'm into. And what's really cool is it all sort of dovetails together, you know. When you talk about you know, UFO encounters or belief in extraterrestrial life, it's not necessarily this fringe element. I mean, there is this element that is considered somewhat outside of the mainstream, but it is so frequently talked about amongst mainstream characters, amongst celebrities. It's so often talked about in TV shows, and TV shows that do pretty well. I mean, you know, ratings-wise, and it's a popular go-to subject for movies and comic books and everything. So, you know, what's cool is, like, yeah, I started doing this stuff for me to kind of create my own space where I could go talk about these things in the way I wanted to talk about them. But sure enough, it wasn't something that I thought would be a website sort of on the fringe is very much mainstream.
Right. And what's, you know, kind of getting into that is, and I'm sure you've seen this because it doesn't seem like when you started it, it was so much the case, but this whole geek genre has really taken off.
Yeah, yeah, it has. And obviously I'm very happy about that. You know, I would say you know, the idea for geeks, like, yeah, I mean, geek culture journalism in the last, like, 4 or 5 years has just been on the rise. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to the fact that, you know, these major blockbuster movies and popular TV shows are based off of comic books and based off of, like, geek culture, you know. But that's also been the case for a long time. I mean, if you look back to when the first Harry Potter movies come out, I mean, that was geek culture, or Lord of the Rings, or going further back, you know, the Tim Burton Batman movies or the Richard Donner Superman movies. But at that time, it wasn't really called geek culture. And if anything, they were sort of trying to candy coat that stuff so it was, like, geeky without being called geeky. But it was in the last, like, 4 or 5 years that it's really this idea of geek culture has, you know, become popular. And, you know, I think it's just the children of the 80s and the children of that generation where we really just started embracing it and letting our geek flag fly. We are now sort of professionals in this world, and you've got guys like Chris Hardwick over at Nerdist who is trailblazing some good stuff, and io9.com, and even like ain'titcoolnews.com. You know, it's basically this world of the geeks are now, you know, professional geeks, and that's why I call myself sort of a professional nerd. It's like, now you can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that answer, like, sort of your question as far as, like, how this kind of came to be?
Yeah, well, and a bit, I mean, and, well, just that you've been able to see it transform, because you've been kind of a pioneer in the Greek arena.
Yeah, well,
but when you saw, you know, like you said, it was kind of more nebulous. It was here and there and all over the place, kind of sprinkled around, but it has coalesced lately where, you know, everybody's got a geek channel. Unfortunately, I guess MTV just canceled theirs, but, you know, they all have, like, this geek silo that they've created for news and everything. How did that kind of, in your view, come about?
Well, I remember I was working at I was working for the Chicago Tribune Company back in, like, 2005. I think it was 2005. And I was the editor for a weekly that we were putting out. I was based in Pennsylvania putting out this weekly. And I was so excited because there was a couple, like, movies that were coming out within the time that I was there. There was, like, the Superman Returns movie by Bryan Singer. There was the third prequel of Star Wars, Revenge of the Sith. There was, you know, the Spider-Man Part 3. None of those movies, unfortunately, really are beloved now. But, like, when they were coming out, like, I was so excited because there was so much, like, buzz for me personally. And I started noticing there was, like, sort of this interest in it from other people. And I got the go-ahead to do, like, 3 special editions for each of those movies, like, totally devoted to Star Wars, totally devoted to Spider-Man, totally devoted to, like, Superman, and really getting into, like, being able to kind of geek out in print in this very mainstream publication. And I had to sell them a little bit, but then they kind of came around and let me do it. And those remain some of my favorite work from my career. But and after that, you know, none of those movies were really, like, well received. But after that, you know, you would think that would kind of kill the genre. But instead, mm-hmm. I think it kind of helped push things along a little bit. And then Iron Man in 2008, when it hit Comic-Con, I think that really kind of kicks things in another gear. So I would attribute a lot of, like, what's happening now to, like, to Iron Man hitting Comic-Con and then being released and saying, like, look, this is a geeky movie, but, man, everybody is showing up to watch it.
Yeah. Well, and to your point, it seems that the genre began to grow in proportion along with Comic-Con, which also seemed to grow along with the increase in the superhero movies. But, you know, Comic-Con, I remember, was a cool thing, especially for the geek crowd. But it wasn't like the premier event. It was kind of this geeky comic book event. But now, with all the stars have to be there, it's just huge. It's like the event. It's like this major Hollywood event.
Yeah, it was, I know some people out there might disagree, but I would really say that, like, that appearance of Iron Man at Comic-Con really was sort of this tipping point. Before then, it was a place you would go and you would get some good buzz, but now it's like one of the biggest entertainment events of the year, and you have Entertainment Weekly and all of these big media outlets spending a lot of time covering it. And sort of the other thing I think that contributed to the sort of nascency of geek culture was, of course, the internet. That everybody could sort of weigh in and talk about these things in their own way. Before, you may have been, I say before, like going back, you know, into the 80s and early 90s, like you went to a comic book shop and you gathered with your fellow geeks, and it was a cool environment, but still a fairly small, contained environment. Whereas now it's like, you know, you can start your blog over here, and I can start my blog over here, and we can all kind of become part of this much larger community. We can also engage through Facebook pages and social media. So, you know, suddenly everybody is talking about this, and you're like, wow, we're not a small comic book shop anymore. We're an entire global community of nerds. And guess what? We also spend money for these nerdy pursuits, you know, which makes businesses pay attention.
Yeah, it's kind of funny you say that to mention the internet, because, I mean, it's nerds who invented the internet. It's nerds who are certainly more savvy around the internet. So they're the first to understand how to create a blog and be able to easily post a blog and post information. And, of course, they're more into it's that culture that is represented largely on the internet. So I'm sure, you know, there's probably a relation in the growth of the genre with that nerds rule the internet.
Right. And, you know, but what's also kind of nifty is that you don't have to be anymore. You don't have to be a computer savvy or, you know, like a super computer savvy person in order to start your own blog or website, you know, that you can go, you know, within a few minutes, you can pretty much start a blog, and within a few hours, kind of make it look kind of nice. You know, anyone can really create sort of WYSIWYG platform, you know, and put your message out there. And
well, you and I can do that. The kids can do that these days, but I'm sure if you try to teach your aunt how to do that, or your mom, or because I've attempted to do that, and it's seems like a very simple thing, but some people just don't get it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like a larger thing as well, that like when we start convincing ourselves that we can't do something, guess what? We can't do it. Like, now that's a problem that I see that really is frustrating. And yeah, I see it with, you know, my mom, God love her, is like, I just don't know how to do this. It's like, it's not that hard. You're just telling yourself you don't know how to do it, so you can't do it, you know? But, maybe that is sort of what accompanies getting older, you know, much like you don't really pay attention so much to music or whatever anymore. I don't know. I know I'm probably going to get some hate mail from people that vehemently disagree with that statement, and it is a generalization, but it does seem to coincide with getting older.
Yeah, I think that's fair, though. I mean, it's a cultural thing, too, because getting to the cultural aspects, I think that, well, for me growing up, and you know, I'm a little older, I mean, it was this kind of thing where, and you still hear it with, like, the correspondence dinner being called, like, the geek prom or nerd prom or something like that, being interested in a topic or in technology and computers and how to do things was seen as nerdy. And for a while there, that was not something that was appreciated. It was something to be avoided by some people who felt they were more, you know, fashionable or more, just not nerdy. But there's been like this switch where now it is okay and now it is cool.
Well, yeah, and yeah, this idea of being a geek is very much cool now. It is very fashionable.
In fashion, yeah.
It's, I mean, that's like a whole, you know, sociological examination right there about how this thing that started out on the fringe and was entirely unfashionable is now one of the buzzwords that's thrown around for cool right now.
Right.
You know, and then that's even led to sort of this backlash against geek culture about, like, well, you're not a real geek because you weren't there at the beginning, or you weren't, you know, this or that, or, you know, which I think is kind of silly. But I just sort of look at it as, you know, a geek is anyone that, you know, really becomes part of a community and expresses their love for this thing. That you can be a political geek. You can be, you know, a comic book geek, or specifically a, you know, a geek for certain role-playing games, or like, you know, Skyrim, or, you know, like things. There's so many areas. And then, you know, maybe nerd is just that next level up that you're, you know, so into it, encyclopedic knowledge, and that one thing is really what you're into, as opposed to having like a couple different interests, you know. I think
yeah.
The nerd is the, you know, more encyclopedic level, you know.
Yeah, that's funny you say that too, because there is the debate, nerd versus geek, and who's what.
It's used so interchangeably, and I'm guilty of that as well. I certainly do, but yeah, that's really how I define it. You know, it does kind of bother me when there are the people that bash on sort of the quote-unquote non-geek crowd because they say, yeah, you're just watching the new J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies. Well, you can't be a geek because you weren't there at the beginning. Well, okay, I understand a part of that. Like, you know, I old habits die hard, and a part of that, part of me cringes a little bit when I hear that. But then I stop and say, well, look, you know, if someone's into this and they love it and it gives them joy and they're just super excited about it and that is where their knowledge is, cool. More power to them, because, you know, it only, I think, improves things for us all when you're kind of being positive about it and encouraging that love, instead of saying, like, no non-geeks allowed, no girls allowed, you know, or whatever. Like, that doesn't do anything to help. Sort of pushes us back into that fringe shadow, which I don't think we want to go back to.
Well, it's funny, because I see exactly what you're saying, and just kind of looking at both sides, because I totally agree with you. But, you know, and I don't think some of the younger people realize today, though, that, you know, the nerdy guys are the geeks, the people who are into technology and stuff like that. And now it's taken for granted, everybody's into it, really were shunned to the point that they were beat up, you know, the jocks versus the nerds type of stuff. That was, you know, really happened in the past. And I think to people who have grown up, it's like, oh, now the jocks want to be nerds when they used to beat me up because I was a nerd type of thing that goes on with some of the older people. So I could kind of see that frustration. But you're right. I mean, if people are embracing, you know, who you are now and what you do, more power to it.
Well, I'm with you. Like, you know, you in the past earned your kind of geek cred through it was a trial by fire. You didn't necessarily want to be an outcast, or you didn't necessarily want to be, but you loved this thing and you celebrated it, and that celebration is what sort of pushed you, you know, off to the side or made you quote unquote unpopular. And now, yeah, it is the popular thing. But then, yeah, it's funny that some of those old school nerds are then becoming sort of the semi-bullies now, saying, like, you know, we were ostracized for our love then, and now we're going to ostracize you for loving this thing now, you know, because,
yeah.
Which is sort of this interesting flip to it. You know, a piece that I'm pretty proud of, it's like 2 years old now, but I still think it's relevant, is I sort of did this examination of the hipster versus the nerd, and sort of where each subculture is coming from, and not really vilifying one or you know, just kind of breaking them down. And it's really interesting because you have one group that, you know, they would like to be included, but their interests made them excluded them, you know. And then you have another group that actively seeks things out to exclude themselves, you know. So, you know, even that kind of, like, dichotomy is pretty fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And I guess now to bridge to the paranormal, because I think it does fit, because I think, you know, it is pertinent in that a lot of people in this field, a lot of my listeners are UFO nerds, and I don't think they're afraid to say that. And there is and this kind of the geek crowd and the paranormal kind of have this relation, and they're almost like uncomfortable bedfellows in a way, in that paranormal people, of course, appreciate that entertainment pays attention, which they do, and a lot of it then is bridged with movies and entertainment and sci-fi. At the same time, there's a frustration in that, you know, some of the reality TV bridges entertainment, whereas researchers would prefer something that is more pure and demonstrating, you know, what they're doing. We've got kind of this uncomfortable marriage of the paranormal. I mean, would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would actually say that say like the paranormal nerd is perhaps the most untapped and still most disrespected kind of nerdy subculture out there. And I think it's probably because sort of the science-y nerds, not all of them, of course, but I think there's this contingent of science nerds that laugh at the people that are into cryptozoology, ghost hunting, you know, ufology. I think that, you know, there's that contingent that mocks those people because they think it's silly and not scientifically feasible. And then I think that there's this sort of entertainment nerdy geek contingent that mocks those people because they say, oh, well, we know that this stuff is comic book stuff, but you guys are actually out there hunting for ghosts and Bigfoot, and that's ridiculous. And then there's sort of the mainstream element, who says, like, all of you guys are wackadoos, you know? I feel like the paranormal geek crowd is is the most unnoticed. And this is despite the fact that you have, like, Ancient Aliens, you have Ghost Hunters and Finding Bigfoot, or the, you know, all the shows that consistently do okay in the ratings that they keep coming back. But they're still sort of in that very fringe world.
Although it does seem, and maybe you would agree, because I mean you've watched this evolution as well, but that the popularity of kind of geek culture as that's growing, so has the popularity of paranormal shows and interest in that topic.
Yeah, and they kind of, I mean, they operate on a parallel, and then occasionally they intersect, but then they still sort of remain on a parallel. You know, it is so curious. I mean, even sort of the habits of these dedicated groups are so similar to other geeky subcultures. I mean, there is a shared language. There is, you know, events or conventions where people gather at to celebrate these things. There are, you know, it's like it has this very kind of like tribe mentality, which is sort of common in other geek cultures or other subcultures, actually. But yeah, you know, it is curious because, you know, you have, let's say, the ghost type show example. You have Ghost Hunters, Ghost Adventures. Previously, you had Paranormal State. You have, you know, Paranormal Witness. You have, like, every network seems to have their own take on it. And yet, I they're all equal, all doing pretty well in the ratings, but none of them are so huge that they would be considered a mainstream hit. Like, those kinds of numbers would not survive on a regular network, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's like it operates on this parallel with other geek culture, and definitely has you know, ascended at that same time, but still sort of operates separately.
Mm-hmm.
And now, then does kind of like veer back and forth occasionally, you know, and intersect.
What I found, you know, really cool and interesting, and I kind of want to get your take and talk a little bit about more about the acceptance or not of paranormal into that kind of culture, is that I went to, you know, my cousin had talked me into, he knew someone who ran the Denver Comic Con, and which, of course, they're always huge in every state. And he's like, you know, they want you to do a talk, and we can have a table there for MUFON, which is, you know, the UFO investigation organization. And I was really hesitant. I thought, first of all, you know, we want to be scientific, and this is kind of sci-fi. Second of all, I'm not so sure people will be interested. So I did it, and people were really interested. I think we had one of the most popular booths there because I had a map, you know, showing all the sightings in Colorado. People wanted to come over. Nearly half the people came over and said, oh, I had a sighting too, and related their sighting reports and then signed up. And so many of them, this is funny, and you probably appreciate this, said, oh, we didn't know MUFON was real. We thought that was made up from the X-Files, because the X-Files talked about MUFON a couple of times. So they thought it was not real. They didn't realize that, you know, it had existed for so long. So it was cool that those people were so enthusiastic. Of course, you had some of the science guys who were like, oh, this is silly. But there were so much more people that were than any crowd that were interested in it. When you go to the Comic Cons, and especially the big one, you know, I know that they'll have UFO researchers and paranormal researchers usually representing or promoting television shows or movies that were based on their work or reality shows they're on. How are those accepted?
Well, it always depends. I think of the really big ones, it's still overwhelmingly your typical pop culture type characters, the, you know, video games, comics, movies, TV, and primarily fiction. However, I've been noticing that there is more of a presence popping up at these cons. And, for instance, I'm going to Portland Comic Con, run by Wizard World, and they have Aaron Goodwin from Ghost Adventures and Grant Wilson from Ghost Hunters. Now, those are two guys from the two most popular shows involving the paranormal, you know, and so I think they'll probably have a pretty cool reaction. But I see more of these types of people doing better at, like, horror cons, horror conventions, mm-hmm. but I do see that they're slowly gaining ground in the other cons. But for the really big ones, it's still your big marquee players. But I mean, as I understand it, Grant Wilson from, formerly of Ghost Hunters, he's doing a private kind of ghost hunt in Portland, and I think it's sold out. I don't know how many people they were selling tickets to, but it's sold out. So, you know, if that continues to happen, then they're going to expand their reach a little bit more and say, well, you know, let's get some of these other guys out here that have from these other areas, you know. So I think, you know, I think probably it's just driven by the market. You know, they would happily have those people there if they are showing noticeably that people are showing up, spending money to see them, and or if those shows are getting amazing ratings or those books are ending up on bestseller lists, then that will kind of drive the convention market a little bit more to accept them further.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were on this television show, Paranormal Pop Culture, and as you said, you know, you were kind of, you're an entertainment pundit, but you've gotten into the paranormal kind of space. And how did you make that move? Was it because you had an interest in the paranormal, or How did that happen?
So how did I go from being a journalist into doing like the TV show based on it, or having an interest in the paranormal?
Yeah, going from just entertainment to also incorporating and becoming very involved with the paranormal aspects.
Yeah, well, I mean, for me, I grew up in a great time, and I feel like this is personally, there's a conversation I think I may have touched on with you before, is that I think I really grew up in a good time in the 80s for everything. Sort of, being in love, it was like I was so intensely in love with so many different franchises and elements of pop culture. So, you know, I was a big Star Wars junkie, am a big Star Wars junkie. My dad had me watching old episodes of Star Trek, and then Next Generation came on. Indiana Jones. But also in addition to that, like Twilight Zone and the movies of Steven Spielberg alongside of that, these old Time Life books called Mysteries of the Unexplained and Isaac Asimov science fiction novels. And so, you know, for me, I always loved, ghosts and aliens and stories of of undiscovered creatures. And I always loved tales of anomalies in the space-time continuum and this idea of like wormholes and things like that, like, or psychic phenomena. But that was also always part of the pop culture that I was consuming, you could, like, essentially Indiana Jones, they have covered ghosts and aliens and other like kind of mystical and supernatural properties within that franchise alone. So I always had a love in it. I remember having, I still have a couple of these books around, like tattered copies of like UFO encounters like I said, the Mysteries on the Unexplained, which talked a lot about those books, or episodes of a couple of the episodes of Unsolved Mysteries would touch upon like UFOs. And it was always a big thing for me. Professionally, it was back in 2004, I guess, when Ghost Hunters kind of first appeared on the Sci-Fi Channel, I just sort of said, this is going to be big, and I was right. And I was able to write about it a little bit, which kind of got me some attention. And then I was able to write more about it, and it got me further attention. And then in 2009, I just started my own website, paranormalpopculture.com, because I wanted my own space to talk about this. Like, I had always had the love for it, but I'm like, you know what? I'm doing this as a job and getting paid for it, but now I want to create my own space to say, like, look, let's talk about this in a more exclusive way. And it continues. And then the Travel Channel show, Paranormal Paparazzi, I've never liked the name of it, by the way. alliteration worked, but it was, contained a lot of elements from the Paranormal Pop Culture website. It was an entertainment news show and lifestyle show. We were never trying to prove or disprove the claims of others, but we wanted to hear people's stories, and we wanted to talk to celebrities. So we would go talk to people that, police officers that said, they caught some sort of object in their dash cam, dashboard cam, and we would hear their story and come back and talk about it, but we were never really passing judgment on it. And that's something I remain very proud of, is that we presented the argument from the point of view of the audience and examined it without ever trying to confirm or deny it. It was important to me because I was also an executive producer on it. Important for me that other people kind of made their own call on what they saw. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I try to operate even now, that I love talking about this stuff and I love asking questions and getting into conversations. But at the end of the day, I think it's important for people to come to their own decisions instead of me saying believe this or don't believe that.
Mm-hmm. Why? What made you feel at that time back then that Ghost Hunters at that time was going to be a big deal?
You know, I think it's that I knew I loved it, and it connected with me, and it was really a gut feeling because, you know, I hadn't seen anything out there like this. And also I saw very early on they shared DNA with Ghostbusters, honestly, that when you look at it, the show was about these sort of blue-collar guys. I mean, in Ghostbusters, they're scientists, but they're scientists who are down on their luck. You know, they get kicked out of Columbia and then have to, like, make a go of it. So blue-collar guys with gadgets, with sort of this recognizable logo, this kind of banter involved. Like, I saw early on that Ghost Hunters was sort of the reality TV version of Ghostbusters. So that's what their aim was. All that there was this connection, and I enjoyed it. And I figured other people would too. And since then, you know, I've gone back and tracked a lot of statistics and other things that were kind of prime for this was that right at that time, MySpace was still very strong and Facebook was on the rise. And so you had this social media element that was just emerging where if you were interested in this stuff, you didn't have to fear judgment at your local PTA meeting or you know, in your neighborhood if you brought it up. Instead, you could kind of go online and find other like-minded people in the next town, in the next state, in the next country, and connect with those people and talk about these things. And also say, like, oh, by the way, there's this cool new show out, or, oh, have you seen this book? Or and then there was, like, meetup.org, I believe, which is still out there. And for a couple years going, it's been a while since I checked, when you would look up paranormal groups on meetup.org, it was about as high as groups labeling themselves as Republican or Democrat. So
wow.
Two major political parties in the country, and paranormal was, like, sandwiched right up there in the same numbers. So it was, I mean, that was just sort of some facts and figures I figured out afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Well, and like you've said, you know, especially with the UFO, there's been some shows that do good. Obviously, the ratings must do pretty good because they're always doing the shows constantly. Everybody's got to have their show. There's more coming up. In fact, you know, we're going to have some premieres of some shows from the Discovery Channel, but they're going to be shown, I think, on Science Channel at the conference. But there hasn't been a breakthrough kind of like Ghost Hunters, and I know they've tried. Being an entertainment pundit, if they come to you, and they probably have, and said, how do we mirror the success of Ghost Hunters but with a UFO show? What would be your advice?
Well, you know, one of the things that works so well with Ghost Hunters is you're in a different location each week, and the places look different, and although I think a lot of the formulas have kind of run their course and are going to start, you know, like maybe not be as exciting as they once were. You know, you have like the night vision cameras or the thermal cameras where it looks spooky and you can have people say, what was that? And turn around the corner. And this is by no means, you know, mocking them because I find it entertaining. But whereas with UFO shows, it's even if you're in different locations, they seem to always default to, yes, they have the night vision cameras or whatever, but they're always just like pointed in the sky, and the sky looks very similar from episode, you know? And
uh-huh.
And then there's this element that I've seen that just like, I don't know, bothers the hell out of me, where it's like, we can't even be showing this. The government's going to shut us down, and we shouldn't be talking to this person. I'm kind of like, no, I'm pretty certain if the government wanted to shut you down, this footage would never even end up in the editing bay, you know, much less get broadcast, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
You know, so I guess my advice would be, you know, focus on the people more, focus on the stories more, I think, honestly, the field could use an injection of younger people talking. You know, there's a lot of great people out there, and a lot of men and women who have been in the field for a long time and contributed a lot. But there needs to be some younger blood to inject some fresh energy into it. So that would be sort of what I would recommend as well. And but primarily, like, you know, the stories. And if you're gonna revisit the well-known stories, you got to bring something new to the table too, you know. But unfortunately, a lot of times I feel that they have just tried to, you know, apply the ghost hunter type formula onto, you know, UFO shows.
Right.
I mean, what's your thought on it?
No, I totally agree with you. I think you're exactly correct in that they've tried to use that same model, which obviously doesn't work. The problem is, one of the things is, I totally agree with your point, too, about the secrecy thing. Because it's like, okay, there is a suspension of belief thing, and that does work with some people, but a lot of people can put two and two together, like you said, and like, well, if you're going to be shut down and the government isn't going to let you do it, why are they letting you do it?
Yeah.
You know, you are airing it aspect. So I think you're right about that. And the other thing, you're right, I think you're right about the sky, and it's also a lot more, it's much more difficult than, like, with ghost hunting, you have so many hot spots around where you can go check for things, and they sometimes find stuff, and like you said, they look different. But with the UFO thing, yeah, the skies look the same everywhere. So I think you've got a lot of good points there. It would be cool. I don't think people realize, and producers realize, there's just such a rich history, and there's so many events that they can look at. I've been looking at the Blue Book, you know, unknowns recently, and writing about those, and so many of them are just incredible stories. And
yeah,
if they took that aspect maybe more along the lines of like a paranormal witness, I think that would be a lot better.
Yeah, I mean, I tend to agree that, and again, like that, I like the stories, because I think it's hard to really do a investigation-based show, even with ghosts, you know. But when it comes down to ghosts, like, there's more of a leap of faith. You're, at the end of the day, you're, you know, it seems like even with the evidence, if you're going to believe it's evidence or not evidence, and maybe that's at play with you know, UFO stories and alien encounter stories. But I almost feel like more people out there, this is not based on a poll number that I have in mind right now, but more people there, I think, are likely to believe in some sort of extraterrestrial life and likely to believe in government conspiracies. I think a lot of people out there, more people believe in that on average than ghosts, I'm guessing. And you know, maybe that creates more of a burden where, like, when you present this evidence or when you're filming a show, it's almost like too easy to kind of go off the cliff, you know, and into ridiculousness. Or maybe, like, people, even if they believe in the concept, when you present evidence, maybe they just expect a little bit more than they would with a ghost show where there is more of that leap of faith involved. And this is stream of consciousness theorizing right now, so I could be just sounding ridiculous. But that's sort of like one of my thoughts with it. And yet, there are some really cool stories that you could focus on and focus on the people and present it in a different way. Now, the shame is that there's also, you know, so many stories out there that, unfortunately, you know, the people involved are getting much older and passing away, and we are losing these great resources. I really wish there was some, like, a good solid production going out there and documenting this, you know, and especially maybe at the end of towards the end of these people's lives, where, you know, there's not as much fear of retribution at that point, you know, where they're go out there.
But like you said, I mean, the ghost shows that are successful, I mean, they're largely anecdotal based. And it doesn't seem like, for some reason, there has been a strong effort to mirror that type of formula with the UFOs, because there are a lot of great anecdotes also on a daily basis when it comes to UFOs.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there might also be just this element of if you have, you know, a location such as, I don't know, like Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia is one of my favorite spots. It's supposedly haunted, but it's got a long, rich history, you know, a couple hundred years of history, and then about as many years of, you know, haunted encounters. You know, there are a lot, like, as you mentioned, a lot of hotspots. There's a lot of, like, locations around just the U.S., that can kind of claim that long history and long history of stories, and that allows you more people to interview and more people to more stories to recreate, and that kind of alters that formula a little bit more. There's just more material, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Still, obviously, is a lot of material within, you know, the UFO world. Maybe the stories are just a little bit shorter at times, you know, so producers don't know how to, like, turn that into a entire act in a show.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to ask you, you know, when you, like you said, you would present the stories that came across, what were some of the stories you came across when it came to UFOs that you found more compelling?
Oh, wow, this is going to be hard for me to remember.
Yeah.
And then not all of them actually aired. For me, I'm always the most compelled. I remember one where it was, like, supposedly a UFO caught on camera by these guys filming a rap video. And this one was around the internet quite a bit. And we went and interviewed the guys, and they all seemed like pretty cool guys. But looking at it, it looks to me like it was just like a reflection off of this guy's gold chain or his bling, if you will, you know, reflection off of that and then into the camera. Didn't look like a UFO or anything to me. Could be wrong, but, you know, but again, it's up for other people to decide. That's just sort of my opinion. But, you know, that was sort of not, like, super memorable for me, but I always like it when you have people that are involved as professionals and in very well-respected careers who, you know, go out there and say, like, look, this weird thing happened to me. When it is, you know, police officers who are still active and they're catching stuff on their dashboard cameras and, you know, they're reacting to it on camera, you know, like, as it's happening, like, what the hell is that? Like, that to me is the kind of story I want more from. Those I can kind of sink my teeth into a little bit more. I try not to credit anyone's story, you know, out of hand and say, well, that just sounds ridiculous, so it must be. So I think the key is to really try to give everybody a fair shake and hear what they have to say.
Right.
But sadly, I'm trying to think of some more specific cases. But, you know,
that's
typically
okay.
I do like it when it's people that, or when it's obviously something that's, you know, corroborated by a lot of other people at once.
Mm-hmm. And I guess to end, because we're about out of time, on more of a positive note, to see if you agree with this. If it seems as though, along with all of these shows and everything, that at least maybe you've seen this, and we've talked about it a bit, that along with the paranormal, overall we've seen the growth and popularity of the shows, but that it also seems that when it comes to the news and everything, And even celebrities seem more comfortable sharing their paranormal and their UFO stories, and the media seems to be nicer and less tongue-in-cheek about UFO stories than they used to be. I mean, do you see this as a trend, and do you see that continuing?
Well, I certainly see it as a trend on social media. I think part of it is just that on social media, our filters are just broken down a lot more, our filters of what's acceptable, you know. Sometimes that's a lot of bad stuff that's being said, but, yeah, I mean, the celebrities just, like, pop out there and say, hey, I just saw this thing over my house, and then a couple other people are tweeting that at the same time. That's pretty fascinating to me. And, yeah, I think that is a trend, and I think that will only continue. Within the news, I still think that there is a lot more that has to be done better in the media, that if you're going to have a segment on it, that you have to do some sort of follow-up on some sort of sighting. That takes time, that takes energy, it takes money. But if you're going to put something out there, do follow up. I would like to see more of that. I have been seeing more of it, but I still think there's a long way to go. I obviously am biased on this because I do write for Huffington Post, but I think that, you know, it counts for a lot when you have guys like Lee Spiegel out there who's applying serious journalism to this field. When I see guys like you out there, you know, writing about it, who is not just automatically against it or, you know, automatically endorsing it, that matters. So I think online there's a wave of better journalism being applied to this. Local news still has a way to go, though.
Yeah. Well, great. Well, thank you so much. And that's what you're going to be touching on at the conference, right? You're going to be talking about celebrity sightings.
I certainly will be, yes. And I've got, based on my own reporting and based on actual cited sources instead of just Floyd's or as overheard by so-and-so, talking about UFO encounters with celebrities. It's going to be a lot of fun. And I look forward to everybody seeing me out there and say hi to me on Twitter and everything ahead of time. And come up to me and say hi to me at the International UFO Congress.
Yeah, awesome. It's funny you mentioned Twitter because if you Google Aaron Sagers, you know what pops up in Google in your description is that you are a Twitter fiend.
It's very true. I definitely am. And but Twitter's been good to me, so I will continue fiending on Twitter.
And then people can read more at paranormalpopculture.com.
That is correct. And, hey, even if you ever want to contribute, we're always looking for people to talk about the entertainment genre of paranormal, supernatural, and horror. So, yeah, give me a buzz.
Awesome. I will, because it's always fun. I love it when I post something and then entertainment picks it up.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah, that's fun. So, and you're busy out there. I mean, you're writing for I know you write a lot of blogs on Huffington Post. Who else where else can people see your work right now?
Well, the place to find me is I still contribute to MTV and CNN, and I do a lot of pundit work out there. I would say keep an eye out for me on the convention circuit. I'll be at Portland Comic Con this week, and then in New Orleans for New Orleans Comic Con with Wizard World, and I'm all over the place. So yeah, and I love to meet people and you know, talk about their experiences.
Awesome. Well, cool. Everybody will have to come to the conference then to meet you, and I know you'll have a table, and so people will be able to come and buy some of your cool T-shirts and stuff, and like you have, what is that, zombie lip balm or something like that?
Oh yeah, my zombie balm, my zombie chapstick.
Right.
Yeah, that's right. And it's I'm not just saying this because it is my label, but it is actually the best chapstick ever, and which is why I made it, because I actively love it and go through a lot of it on my own.
Well, you'll need it in the dry Arizona desert out here, especially coming from snowy New York.
I look forward to that, actually.
Yeah, I'm sure you do. It is nice out here. So thank you very much. Really excited to see you in a couple of weeks. And again, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks so much, and I will see you soon.
Thank you so much to Aaron Sagers for joining us. Really fun talk. Of course, it was a lot about geek culture and sci-fi, but, you know, the rise of geek culture, and I think we made a good argument for it, has kind of paralleled the rise in the focus on UFOs and the paranormal. So maybe they are related, like Aaron was talking about. So that's really cool. So that was a lot of fun to talk about that. Remember, you can go read more about Aaron at paranormalpopculture.com. You can also just Google his name, and you'll find his articles on CNN and Huffington Post and other areas. And then also you can come and meet him at the UFO Congress. So that's really exciting. UFO Congress is now only a couple weeks away. It's like 2 weeks from Wednesday. That's like the day after tomorrow. It's crazy. So it's coming up really quick here. I hope you can join us because it's going to be a lot of fun. Not only is Aaron Sagers going to be there, but we just recently added another speaker. That's Rob Simone, who is another guest host for Coast to Coast AM. He also has his own radio show out of L.A., and it's also aired out of London. So some of our U.K. listeners, you may be familiar with his work. And maybe you want to come out. We do get a lot of people, actually, from the U.K. that come to the Congress. So that's always a lot of fun. So you'll be able to meet Rob Simone. That'll be a great talk. I've known him for years, and he's a great speaker. So I think people will really enjoy his talk. Also, the main host of Coast to Coast AM, George Norrie, will be at the conference. In fact, he's going to do a talk, a Q&A, and he's going to be hosting Saturday Night Live, but it will be live. He'll be doing it, giving away the award ceremony that we have. He'll also be presenting the awards to the film festival people and stuff like that. So that's going to be a lot of fun. And, of course, we're going to have Timothy Good. He's from the UK, so sticking to that UK theme. But we're going to have a lot of scientists. We're going to have some great researchers who have written some books lately. We've got Bigfoot in the mix this year, the Adamski Society. So those of you who are familiar with the George Adamski case, you'll have some of the best material from that case. If you're not familiar with this case, this is from the 50s and 60s and was one of the biggest cases, really, for the longest time, UFOs and ETs. It was all Adamski. You know, everybody's talking Adamski. In fact, lots of the iconic figures of UFOs you see today are due to the pictures that George Adamski took. So come find out more about him. This is a rare and unique opportunity to do that. So the UFO Congress is going to be a lot of fun. Go to ufocongress.com to get tickets. Or, of course, you can find out more and you can read the stories that Jason and I talked about at openminds.tv. And I want to thank, as always, the dudes who donated the music, because the music's so cool for the show. And the opening music is done by Caleb Hanks and the close by Two Earth Minutes. And thank you all for joining me once again. We will talk to you next week, people. Adios, muchachos.